Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show.
No matter how far.
Don't worry, baby.
Just call my name. I'll be there in a hurry. You don't have to worry.
Oh, baby, there ain't no mountain high enough.
And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to hear from a college of pharmacy in India that probiotics can help you with quality of life if you have type 2 diabetes. This is important since we have an astronomical pandemic of diabetes and diabetes deaths and complications, including heart disease. So anything that can lower the number and keep people out of harm's way is good information. We have a lot of that today. Also today, a special original report. This report is based upon a careful examination of the actual numbers that we're told. It's called Yes, Numbers Matter. Richard Gale and myself will be sharing that. And then Rich will be on studio because the person heading right now, our entire, war on this pandemic, the COVID virus, is not Mike Pence, it's not Donald Trump, it is Anthony Fauci. We have a lot of concern about the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease because he has, in our opinion, an extremely problematic background. He would be the last person that I would ask his advice. We're going clear back to the war on AIDS and all the fiascos from that. Because I was a part of that battle, at least promoting the idea that we shouldn't be bringing politics and profiteering in it, and that's the only thing we saw, profit and politics. And I'll give you my own assessment of that. Then we're going to hear some clips. One clip in particular, what is the truth? Do we need masks or not need masks? You're going to hear from the head of the World Health Organization, who is a ally of China. They were responsible for getting this man his position. And he makes one misstatement after another. Now he wants to come in your home or your apartment and test your kids. You can't resist. And this would be door to door. So what's the likely outcome of that? Well, in New York City, nothing. In the suburbs, they would bend over backwards. Sure, anything you want to do, we're for you. We worship the feet of authority figures. In other parts of America, you don't want to be trying to take someone's kids away to test them. That won't go down so well, so we'll talk about that. Also today, I'm going to give you some ideas on how to make the best possible protection as far as masks. I'll give you a little guide as to how to do it. In fact, we're doing it right now. I just went out and bought a sewing machine and bought some fabric, very easy. You can make a lot of them, so you can make enough for your own use and your family's. And unlike the other surgical masks, these you can reuse. You can wash them. Put a little bit of bleach in there, it disinfects them, and it's ready to go again and again and again. And you can have 20, 50, 100 of these in your own home. This is something we can do. Also today, we're going to look at some other things that are not difficult. For example, why is it that everyone seems offended by everything today? So we're going to have a little segment on the truth, why everyone is suddenly getting offended. But then specifically, college students. Now this is not all college students, but an awful lot of them. Mainly those coming from professional background families. So do college students hate free speech? Well, a person went on campus and filmed them. And wow, yeah, they do. They hate everyone else's speech except their own. They get easily offended by anything. Now just think for a moment, those of you over a certain age, let's say you're over the age of 40. That's a lot of Americans. Do you remember George Carlin? I'll bet you do. And also, let's go back to Richard Pryor, Don Rickles, Robin Williams, Jonathan Winters. We've had hundreds of very funny comedians. Today, I don't find any comedians funny. I find them vulgar, and I find nothing funny about the hosts at the late night shows that are supposed to be funny. They're ironic. You know, you're supposed to think about a joke but not laugh at it because you might offend someone. So today we're bringing someone on with the intent of offending everyone that we can. George Carlin. And he's going to talk about stuff I can assure you is going to offend the baby boomers. Put nets under the windows in case they decide to jump out. Life is worth losing. Dumb Americans, so says George Carlin. Now, is he right? Is he wrong? Well, we're going to play it. I think it's appropriate. That's our show today. And we always begin with the latest on health and healing. You've heard talk about probiotics for years. Let's see, I was talking about probiotics from Miso back in 1970. Yeah, I did a show on Miso, a whole hour, by one of the leading authorities on Miso and all the different things that Miso does. So we've been talking about this for a long time. I'm glad to see everyone else has caught up. But in the current journal of the National Natural Science, Biology, and Medicine, the peer-reviewed journal, here's what they're saying. If you get probiotics into your body, you can take a capsule of probiotics. I suggest the higher doses, 2 to 3 times a day. And this study lasted 3 months. Then what you have is a healthy gut. And a healthy gut means that you have very good life-enhancing bacteria. It can impact your blood sugar. It is good for creating homeostasis, especially involving insulin and serum insulin. And all your markers that would be negative for diabetes can suddenly improve. So in lay language, probiotics prove anyone with type 2 diabetes is health. They can decrease your blood sugar. That's good. They can increase insulin sensitivity. That's even better. So that's what we're up to. Now, from Thomas Jefferson University comes a study. They found in the peels of fruit nutrients that halt the damage and spurs neuronal repair in multiple sclerosis. It is called ursolic acid, U-R-S-O-L-I-C. Now, it's abundant in fruit peels and some herbs. It both prevents and repairs neurons, and especially in models of multiple sclerosis. So this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. That's our top scientific body in the United States. So what you do is you simply look at peels of apples and prunes, to give you an example. And those are two of the easiest ones, and you throw those into a blender. Remember, 4 years ago, I said, if you want to have more quercetin and the healing power of apples, peel 4 of them. Take the skins, and of course these are hopefully organic, because otherwise they're heavily sprayed. You throw them into a blender. You can throw other things in with it, whatever you choose to liquefy it with. And then you keep the apple, the bulk of the apple you peeled, separate. You can make apple butter, apple sauce. You can blend that and put it into a hot oatmeal. All kinds of things you can do. But that apple peel is really powerful. It would be at the top of the list. It's just like papaya seeds, a little black seeds in there. Terrific for digestion. Absolutely first rate. And prunes are extremely beneficial. Not just because they help people, you know, have more regular movements, but because a prune was what? A plum. And the plum skins are extremely beneficial as well. And you can do the same thing. You can peel the skin of maybe 4 or 5 plums, put those in a blender, and then take the rest of the flesh and make yourself a fruit bowl with that. However you want to use it is fine. But if you want to help yourself have healthier neurons in your brain, then you want the skins of those fruits. And that's what this study showed. Now, from a neurological research institute in Italy comes a study about the potential therapeutic effects of alpha lipoic, L-I-P-O-I-C, acid in memory disorders. We sure do have a lot of memory disorders around the world, but especially in America. So according to news out of Rome, the editors said the researchers were looking at people with aging and biological markers and the gradual loss of the ability to maintain homeostasis of the brain, meaning you forget short-term memory first, long-term memory. And that's kind of the puzzling part. You can take someone, let's say, who's 70, who can recall what they did in high school or pre-high school with great clarity. Ask them what they ate for breakfast and they can't remember it. Short-term memory is gone. Long-term memory is still there. And it can be frustrating. So what they're finding is alpha-lipoic acid, a low molecular weight diethyl, and that's D-I-T-H-I-O-L, with a chiral center, is a supplement that has enormous potential and a therapeutic level for preventing and treating neurodegenerative diseases. Everyone I work with who has any kind of central nervous system problem or brain problem, Alzheimer's, ALS, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, all of them, I put on alpha-lipoic acid, time release, and it makes a big difference. Well, this research was done by the Department of Neurology and at this institute, and they just showed enormous benefit for improving memory capacity and other neurodegenerative diseases with alpha-lipoic acid. From the University of Barcelona, which is in Spain, as well as Loma Linda University, comes a study about eating walnuts. What they're saying is walnuts preserve your youthful telomere strands. What do I mean? Science has established that diet plays a very important role in the length and integrity of telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E-S, the small protective caps on the ends of chromosomes that serve to protect the vital DNA information inside the nucleus of a cell. Now, a cross-functional team of researchers from Spain and California deepened this body of knowledge by publishing the research into the effects of eating walnuts on leukocyte telomere length. And this opportunistic sub-study was conducted within a larger study called Walnuts and Healthy Aging. If you've heard this program for any length of time, you have heard me say that the way you start your day is to have, you can make a porridge, you can make a smoothie, and in that you should put some nuts. Now you can either put the nut itself, from macadamia to cashews to filberts to pignolias, pistachios, and of course almonds and walnuts are the top of that food chain. Now you can either put them in as a whole nut or as nut pieces and just chew them up, or you can get a nut butter, and the nut butter is nothing more than taking those whole nuts and just grinding them up until they're smoother. Some people have some digestive problems and they require a smoother fiber that gives it to them. Well, the walnuts, and just a handful of walnuts once a day, was able to maintain for 2 years the LTL in cognitively healthy adults as compared to a group that abstained from walnuts. So walnuts definitely impact telomeres. And that is important for healthy aging. You see, walnuts between 30 to 60 grams a day. And that's only about 2 to 3 ounces a day. It's not much. And they provide good energy requirements. They release their natural sugars slowly. So that's good. So it helps stabilize your blood sugar over several hours. And they randomized the study. They had two groups. One group got the walnut, the other group did not. And there was substantial and statistically significant difference in that. And that's because of what are known as dietary anthropometrics in fatty acids, meaning you're getting a good fat. That good fat can help your body, because a lot of the body has fat, and especially the brain. And the reason a lot of people get older faster is because their telomeres shorten. And when you shorten the telomere from sedentary activity, from alcohol in any quantity, at any percentage, from sugars, from meat, from fried food, and from stress. So walnuts are a vegan source of polyunsaturated fatty acids, and they contain the highest amount of alpha-linolenic acid and a rich matrix of antioxidants, namely polyphenols and vitamin E. Those are also related to maintaining leukocyte telomere length, and that helps you live longer. One more study, this is from Fayyum University and as well as Cairo University in Egypt, and they found that fennel, you know, the herb, and I like to buy fresh fennel and then cut it into little pieces and put it in a salad. Gives you that kind of licorice quality and a crunch to the salad. Well, the oil from that has antifungal activity, especially against Candida albicans, which is very popular in the United States. So many people have it because so many people eat refined carbohydrates. There's your donuts, your bagels, your pretzels, your potato chips, your french fries. And all that, along with sugars and soft drinks, can create an imbalance in the gut bacteria, leading to candidiasis. And there's one particular one. It is a vulvovaginal candidiasis, or VVC, or vaginal thrush. It's a fungus, and it can be very irritating. It's messy. It's very smelly. And you have this discharge constantly coming out. And unfortunately, people don't realize how easy it is to create an imbalance in your biochemistry. Now, all of us have some level of candida in our body, but the fennel oil showed the highest antifungal activities among the oils tested. So whoever knew until today that something as simple as fennel oil, not difficult to get, can help you get rid of candida. So, and there's all kinds of microorganisms are known to form biofilms, or what is known as consortia, on different surfaces, like your skin, your teeth. And to screen the biofilm production of these Candida albicans and others are susceptible to antifungal properties. And right at the top is that one oil. By the way, there are 9 other oils that were tested: chamomile oil, jojoba oil, black cumin seed oil, fenugreek oil, cod liver oil, peppermint oil, clove oil, and ginger oil. But fennel oil was number one. Something new, something that helped us. And one last thing from Johns Hopkins University. If you eat a Mediterranean-style diet, you will decrease your risk of diabetes. And that was in this United States-sponsored prospective cohort study. Now, there are variations in the Mediterranean diet, depending upon where in the Mediterranean, the Eastern Mediterranean, the Southern Mediterranean, the Northern Mediterranean, the Western Mediterranean. They all have slight differences, but if you stick with the basics, meaning principally plant-based, lots of beans, lots of nuts, lots of starchy vegetables and leaf vegetables, and some will use fish, some the Mediterranean countries, Eastern Mediterranean mainly, will eat meat. But if you eschew and go strictly to the healthier part of that, then you're on a healthy plant-based diet. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 19 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to first hear a segment from last night's Tucker Carlson show. That's irrelevant whether you like or don't like him or Fox, because you can like what he says or dislike, but he is saying some things I'm finding. He is the only person looking for the truth and saying it, and the things he is saying, I have, on this issue, they are the truth, and we need to hear this. And then Richard Gell and I will weigh in on it and expand it beyond what he is sharing. Back in a moment. directly into a segment last night on Tucker Carlson, including the official saying masks don't count. They're wrong. And that we know the numbers, we don't. And that, well, you'll hear what he has to say. Please stay with us.
In a much-discussed article on Medium recently, two academics from Pittsburgh argued that lifting the lockdown at all, even many months from now, would be negligent. Quote, as long as a large majority of the population remains uninfected, lifting containment measures will lead to an epidemic almost as large as would happen without having mitigations in place at all. Well, that sounds plausible when you read it. In fact, it sounds like science. But is it science? A large majority of the population remains uninfected, they say. But is that true? We don't know it's true. As of today, nobody can say what percentage of the American population is infected or has been infected. There haven't been large-scale randomized tests conducted here. We don't even know when the disease first arrived in the United States. There's informed speculation that this strain of coronavirus has been here since late November or December. Authorities traced the first confirmed case to January 15th in Washington State. An unnamed 35-year-old Chinese immigrant landed in the United States after visiting his family in Wuhan and wound up in a hospital outside Seattle. Apparently, he recovered. Now, depending on how you count, the virus has been circulating among us for up to 4 months now. For most of that time, there was no systematic attempt to quarantine the population. How many Americans were infected over that period? Again, we don't even have a ballpark number for that, but the number could be enormous because the virus turns out to be much easier to transmit than we thought it was. On Friday, you may have noticed, the CDC issued new guidance on mask use. The government now recommends wearing, quote, cloth face coverings in public. Why'd they make that change? Because researchers are learning more about how this virus moves from person to person. Scientists now believe the coronavirus can be transmitted by someone who shows no symptoms merely by speaking. Remember when they told you that hand washing was the key to staying safe? That recommendation was based on the belief the virus lived mostly on surfaces, and that's not the case. We're still not exactly sure how the virus is spread, but among some populations, and this is interesting to know, it appears to be astonishingly widespread. An article in the Italian media last Thursday, for example, described a blood drive in a village in Lombardy. That's in the northern part, the most infected part of the country. Of the 60 people who showed up to give blood, 40 tested positive for coronavirus. None had shown symptoms of it. None knew they had it. Keep in mind that Lombardy has been strictly locked down by government order since March 9th. That's almost a month ago. Yet about 70% of this group got it anyway. A report from Hong Kong in February suggested that a woman diagnosed with the coronavirus may have infected others 10 floors away in the same apartment building, even though she never came into contact with any of them. Health officials concluded the virus likely traveled through plumbing pipes to different apartments. And it wasn't a wild guess. In 2003, an outbreak of SARS spread the same way. So it's starting to look like the coronavirus is more transmissible than we expected or were told. The good news is it also seems far less lethal overall. People are still dying in large numbers. Not all of them are sick or old, and that's terrifying to watch. But as the data trickle in, there's evidence that many infected people are not sick. Iceland has tested a larger percentage of its population than any country in the world. They've tested about 5% of all citizens. The United States, by comparison, has tested 0.3%. So far, about half those who've tested positive in Iceland have been completely asymptomatic. So given all of this, what is a wise response to this pandemic? Historically, health officials have used quarantines to contain infectious diseases. Until now, a quarantine consisted of separating the sick from the general population and then doing everything possible to protect the especially vulnerable. In this case, that would include the elderly and the immunosuppressed, among other groups. We have a pretty good idea that targeted quarantines work. They've been used for centuries around the world. But that's not what we did. Instead, the United States and many other countries instituted mass quarantines. in which government shut down entire nations for long periods. That's never happened before. Now, a mass quarantine makes sense if you're fairly certain it will prevent mass infection. But are we certain of that? Well, despite what you might hear on television, we are not certain of that still. In fact, there are some indications it hasn't been as effective as we'd hoped it would be. Italy imposed one of the toughest lockdowns in Europe. Almost a month later, as we just told you, an overwhelming majority of at least one town has been infected with the virus anyway. Now, it's possible to imagine that a mass quarantine might stop transmission of a virus. It might work if it actually separated people, if citizens were forced to stay in their homes and not have any interaction with other people. But we're not doing that in the United States. We never will do that here. Too many Americans live alone, for one thing. People would starve to death. Instead, the directive we're living under is this: stay home, except to buy food. The one place you can go is the supermarket, where, by the way, everyone else in your neighborhood has been this week. Now, masks needed to be conserved for the sick and for healthcare workers. That was critical. But for everyone else, they were useless. In fact, they said masks increased the odds of you getting sick. The Surgeon General told us that.
World Health Organization and the CDC have reaffirmed in the last few days is that they do not recommend the general public wear masks. Wearing a mask improperly can actually increase your risk of getting disease. It can also give you a false sense of security. So we want to make sure we are reserving PPE for the people who most need it.
If you want to put that aside for healthcare workers, we get that. But if it could actually help us, we would love to help.
But again, the data doesn't show that it helps individuals.
That was insulting nonsense. There weren't enough masks. They didn't want to say it. And so they patronized us and devalued their own credibility. The one thing you really need in a crisis, by lying to us in a way that anyone with Google could have disproved. Years of research, including studies by our own government, have found consistently that masks are useful both for keeping the sick from spreading the disease and keeping the healthy from catching it. That's why they make masks. That's why people use them. The CDC has finally walked back this obvious lie. But it's not just the CDC and our Surgeon General who have lost credibility. The World Health Organization told the same lie. Watch this.
We generally recommend the wearing of masks in public by otherwise well individuals because it has not been up to now associated with any particular benefit. It does have benefits psychologically, socially, and there are social norms around that. And we don't criticize the wearing of masks and have not done so. But there is no specific evidence to suggest that the wearing of masks by the mass population has any particular benefit. In fact, there's some evidence to suggest the opposite in the misuse or wearing a mask properly, or fitting it properly, or taking it off, and all the other risks that are otherwise associated with that.
What a liar. And for perspective, that's the same guy, just in the last segment we showed you on tape, saying that the World Health Organization reserves the right to come into people's homes and take their family members by force. Okay, but wearing masks is wrong. They told you that on March 30th. And already at that point, South Korea and Taiwan had essentially contained their outbreaks. Have they done that? In part by producing a huge number of masks and making people wear them. But the World Health Organization was still pushing that nonsense. That's not a surprise. It shouldn't surprise you, because you know the World Health Organization has spread many lies, including China's lie that coronavirus couldn't transmit person to person, that the virus was under control, that travel restrictions were just racism. In fact, you could argue that coronavirus might have been slowed or stopped by now if the World Health Organization wasn't so incompetent. At times, it seems like they're doing whatever they can to keep it spreading.
Okay. He is absolutely correct on that. Let me just give you a few examples of what he is discussing. First, this study just in, and I want to share it with you to show you how much misinformation we're receiving. This is from McMaster's University. That's up in Hamilton, Ontario, highly respected research center. Quote, surgical masks good for most COVID-19 treatment. The N95 respirator mask should be preserved for healthcare workers involved in inserting breathing tubes for patients with COVID-19. More common medical masks are fine for all other COVID-19 treatments, says preliminary research from McMaster's University. A systematic review of four randomized controlled trials on masks done between 1990 and last month shows the use of medical masks did not increase viral respiratory infection, that's good, or clinical respiratory illness, that's good too, they work. However, there is a consensus that the N95 respirators, designed to fit tight and prevent inhalation of small airborne particles, are best for procedures such as intubation or bronchoscopy when healthcare professionals must insert a tube through a patient's throat. Quote, there is not convincing evidence that those loose-fitting medical masks are inferior to N95 respirators in protecting healthcare workers against viral respiratory infections during routine care during the pandemic, end quote. And that was Professor Mark Loeb, Professor of Pathology and Molecular Medicine at McMaster's and an infectious disease physician in Hamilton. So first of all, for those who are downplaying the masks, why would they do that? Well, how about this? We had no masks. We were completely, totally unprepared. And instead of acknowledging that we were unprepared, that's the CDC, a completely, totally corrupt organization, and we've gone over that. Richard Gale and I have written articles about the CDC and its corruption and its lies, the most common being that they knew years in advance that the MMR vaccine would cause a 324% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American boys, but because they're an institutionally racist organization, remember they did the 40-year Tuskegee experiment, now they carried on. And here's the problem. Not a word from the Black Caucus in Washington about bringing them before a committee under oath and to say, did you know that there was a 324% increase in autism spectrum disorder in African-American boys 36 months and younger? They would have had to say yes, because the top scientist in that division, Dr. William Thompson, confessed that to Brian Hooker, Professor Hooker, whose own son developed autism after taking vaccines. And he also sent him documents that everyone had gotten. Just imagine this, visualize this. All the doctors and scientists at the CDC involved in the vaccine experiment collected all their data, brought it, and put it in black garbage bags to be destroyed. That's obstruction of justice. That's a federal crime. And if you commit a federal crime, you are not indemnified or protected. The government is not able then to come to your fence. And they all engaged in it, including people who testified under oath. Now, we have the footage of them testifying under oath. We interviewed in person, I filmed in person, the top political liaison who put together all those hearings. And she said they all lied under oath, but we didn't have that information to prove it. Now we do. So this is the same CD telling you everything about the coronavirus. So do not trust what they say. So that's just one of the issues. So masks are good. Now I'm going to go a little further before we bring Richard in. I promised you at the beginning of this program that I would help you make some masks. In fact, what we're doing now, and we're probably the safest place in America because we're 3 weeks in and not a single person sick because everyone's wearing masks. And we have a special air purifier that it's not available on the market. But a friend of mine who's a scientist had them, and again, he was smart. He knew that sooner or later he might need these. These are seven-stage filters, the kind you would find in a teaching university hospital operating theater. Nothing gets past it. So everything you can imagine, wearing gloves, staying in the gym 15 feet apart, each person eating at a different table, total hygiene everywhere, and it has not affected the quality of the information or there was some remarkable improvements. I mean, absolutely remarkable. So people will say, well, gee whiz, there's going to be a hassle. No, there's no hassle. We're getting it done. But here's what we're doing now. Simple $99 sewing machine. Good, you know, heavy-duty Singer sewing machine, $99, brand new. But what you want is there are different things you can make a filter from. For example, you can make a HEPA furnace filter, but you have to layer the outside with cotton and on the inside with cotton. That's one. Some people are using the 600 count pillowcases. That gives you 40% protection, which is not bad if you double it. All right, so go to a high count pillowcase and just fold it over, then stitch it. You can use vacuum cleaner bags. Yeah. The HEPA vacuum cleaner bags are meant to keep any particulate matter, danders, molds, allergens from getting into the air for people who have chemical sensitivity or allergies. But again, you have to use the bag and you have to put cotton on the inside, cotton on the outside, and then you have a high filtration. I find that using a flannel, like a lot of people have flannel pajamas. Well, it's simple. You can go up on the internet and get free directions how to make your own masks, and you can cut them out of flannel where you cut the strips at the same time, so you literally no sewing is necessary, none. And then there's all filters are measured based upon, let's say like a 95 filter, at 0.3 micrograms, and that means, or microns, that means that most of the ambient air is going to be filtered out. Now, I have a 99. That's the highest mask you can find in the world. And again, a lot of you have that same mask. If you didn't think that somehow it was unnecessary information when I told you to get your years ago, remember? Years ago, I said, you never know what's going to hit you. It could be a super storm. It could be fires, whatever it is. Wouldn't it be nice to have a backpack? And I even went through a three-hour seminar, what you have to put in the backpack, those 99 filters you could have bought for $5 and put like a dozen there. And you can reuse them if you don't take off the strips. If you leave that little strip, you can use it and wash it, or not wash it, but you can disinfect it. Because on the mask, the exterior of the mask, viruses can rest and live there for a week. And that's why you spray hydrogen peroxide or alcohol on it. And there are a lot of allergy-reducing filters, the HVAC. And the best masks are between 89% and 94%. And sometimes you need two layers. But you want to make a little pocket in the middle so you have room to breathe. So most masks are somewhere between 70 and 80, and that's good. But if you want to get the best material of all, get quilter's cotton, double layer, inner you put flannel, and outer you put the cotton. And so that will help you. You can make your own mask that way and stay protected. And that's the point of the exercise. So you see, with a little bit of ingenuity, and Americans are really good at being able to repurpose things, you can take one of the designs off the internet and just make yourself a little pattern, print it out, and use the pattern at regular size. And my goodness, you can make 20, 30, 50, 100 masks. Very inexpensive, probably the stuff you already have. And if your mask is too thin, that's not going to be a proper protective barrier. And if you double strap it, then you're going to be tighter to the face. And if it's not completely tight where the cheeks are, just put a piece of tape down each side. Now, let's just say and I would love a chance to debate any of these scientists, but they won't debate. If the head of the World Health Organization says that they don't matter, they can be harmful, prove it. I just read and cited you the science that they do help. But let's make it this way. Every time you go in public, in any public place, a subway, a movie theater, a restaurant, a classroom, and let's say every time you went to sneeze, you stood up and says, I'm sneezing without covering my mouth because the head of the World Health Organization and idiots at the CDC says it doesn't matter, you don't have to, and everyone's going to look at it, hold on a second. You're spraying particulate matter that may be infected out, and we're all going to get hit with it because that goes out more than 3 feet. That could go out 30 feet. It could go out 50 feet by sneezing and coughing. So we're told, cough into your elbow, cover your mouth. And of course you do that because it's just proper hygiene, and you do not need to be lectured or in any way virtue shamed by those dancing clowns at the CDC or the head. I wouldn't trust the head of the World Health Organization. I wouldn't trust that World Health Organization because they were complicit in a crime against humanity. What do I mean? The head of the World Health Organization, one of its leading representatives, along with every vaccine maker, the CDC's top people and the FDA's top people, all met in secret at a Simpsonwood conference center. It's a near the CDC headquarters, and they met for one purpose only. There was a study called the Verostratin study, and in that Verostratin study, it showed that over 100,000 children had a statistically significant increase in autism because of the mRNA vaccine. They didn't meet to share this with the world or to tell the vaccine makers your MMR vaccine is dangerous. No, they met to cover it up. How do we know? Because the good work of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who under the Freedom of Information Act got the notes of it. It was all supposed to be secret. It wasn't. Did anything happen? Were there hearings in Congress? No. Were any of those people who were engaged in the cover-up, including the World Health Organization, brought in to testify where their testimony would be under oath? No. Was anyone from the CDC brought in to testify under oath about covering up the autism? No. What does that tell you? What message does that give you? The government is actively working at the behest of the economic interest of the vaccine makers, which is Big Pharma, and not you or I. And also, they have grossly inaccurate information. In fact, just today from the University of Göttingen, there was an article that at the university that about the actual death rate, and they say, quote, an average of only 6% of actual infections detected worldwide. That means 94% of the infections have not been tested. That means we now know that people can have no symptoms and be completely dangerous. And just think of the people based upon their culture or their religion or their social networking. They decide, well, I'm going to just go, you know, have dinner with a bunch of my friends, or we're going to have a, you know, meeting. And I saw this before I came down here. I saw a church group with about, I'm guessing, 300, 200 to 300 people, all socializing and all close together. And it was a covered dish, so everybody was eating everyone else's food. No masks, no gloves. How many of those people were asymptomatic but carriers? So we have no good figures, and I'll get to that in a moment. But let's bring in Richard Gale now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary.
Richard, our concern is not just with the misinformation intentionally or innocently obtained by government officials. Our concern is with the people such as Anthony Fauci, who have led other campaigns and have not been held accountable for the mistakes and that they made in those campaigns. Now they're heading this one. What could possibly go wrong? Give us your research, not opinion, your research on why Anthony Fauci should be challenged on everything he says.
Okay, well, for people who are not familiar with Anthony Fauci, he's been like a permanent fixture in the CDC, and particularly with the National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Disease, going back to the beginning of the Reagan era, I believe, Reagan's term. So he's been a staid fixture there for several decades, and is kind of a quintessential bureaucrat who's now reaching the status of being a hero by a lot of the media. We can go back. I mean, as you've stated many, many times about the corruption of the CDC, and of course the National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Diseases is a division of the CDC, that going back to the HIV crisis, where the CDC and the Reagan administration in particular just fumbled along without adequately, sufficiently, quickly dealing with the AIDS crisis at the time. And one reason for that might be that Fauci had never mentioned, but he had owned a patent for interleukin-2. And so before there was any real action coming from the CDC, and I should make a distinction here between the CDC and the National Cancer Institute, because that's another issue altogether. But there was an enormous delay, and that was because Fauci was trying to through his agency to begin doing all this research with the interleukin 2 therapy as a means to try to eradicate HIV. And this was created an enormous delay in the government making any real concerted efforts to tackle the crisis. There was a Business Week author, Bruce Nussbaum, and he wrote a book years ago called Good Intentions, How Big Business and the Medical Establishment Are Corrupting the Fight Against AIDS. And in that, it was a very, very hard-hitting book. And in that book, he wrote that Tony Fauci and some of the government scientists that were closest to him, Sam Broder and Ellen Cooper, he depicts them as being corrupt, they're power-hungry, incompetent, anxious to please greedy pharmaceutical companies to collect their portion of the glory and the dough. That's the way he wrote this. And very interesting, when even though Fauci had hidden his patent, he had never mentioned this to anyone, but later when the British Medical Journal discovered this and he was queried about it, he said that the government, as a government employee, he was required by law to put his name on the patent for the development of the interleukin 2, and also was required by law to receive part payment that the government received for the use of his patent. So we're going back into the 1980s of his doing this, and there was a war that Fauci waged because it was really the National Cancer Institute that was conducting the better clinical trials at that time, and Fauci was at war with even Gallo at that time. Sometimes we think that Gallo and Fauci are on the same page, but that's really not true. Fauci mounted almost like a Machiavellian campaign to take control of the AIDS clinical trials and prevent any of the other agencies from doing so. And, of course, the money that was being spent, enormous amounts of money that were being spent for these controls, they never seemed to emerge. People with AIDS continued to get sick and die, and in the end, Fauci barely survived his own control, and he had to eventually hand over all everything the government was doing over to Burr's Welcome and for its AZT. There's a lot more that could be said about the HIV issue. There was very interestingly on an ABC magazine program called Day One, when there were efforts being made to bring Peter Duesberg as well, as well as Ted Koppel's Nightline. They were attempting to bring Peter Duesberg and Nobel laureate Carrie Mullis on the program to discuss it. It was Fauci that completely sabotaged all that. He took over the majority of the ballots at the time and was able to force just Duesberg and Kerry Mullis to just having little small sound bites. But we can go back to looking at Fauci's history. There was the terrible flu season that he was claiming. He made a public statement on CNN back in there was the 2009 swine flu crisis, pandemic, which never came. And he was saying it was going to be the worst flu season in our history. He's come out many times stating that there is any risk of vaccinating children is completely imaginary. That was a quote from him. He's made claims that the measles vaccine is one of the most effective vaccines that's ever been developed. We've seen how that's been false. We reported many times on how many people that are coming down with the measles are actually fully among the vaccinated. In 2014, he stated that the healthcare workers should be required to get the flu shot because they can transmit the virus to before they become sick. He was responsible for the monitoring of the 2018-2019 measles outbreak, and when he came on the television station at that time, he was making claims that through our vaccination programs, we thought that we'd completely eliminated the measles from the United States, which was crazy. And back in 2019, this is about a little more than a year ago, before a House subcommittee, he committed perjury. This was a subcommittee of the Oversight Investigation, so it was held to confront and look at the growing public threat concerning measles outbreaks in the U.S. And one of those is a Republican congresswoman, Brett Guthrie, who was questioning Fauci concerning the parents' concerns of the measles virus. And he was asked directly, can it cause brain inflammation known as encephalitis? Is that true? And according to the, if you listen to the taping of this, he took a long time before answering and goes, brain inflammation, inflammatus? And the congressman persisted, yes, can measles vaccine cause encephalitis? And Dr. He blinked and he just said, no, the vaccine, no. This is complete. As we know, even from the measles insert package by the manufacturer, it states very clearly that measles, one of the adverse effects of measles is encephalitis. It's right there. Concerning HIV, swine flu, that, as we remember, Obama declared that as to be a pandemic emergency. Fauci appeared on YouTube to persuade the public to get their swine flu vaccine. He was stating repeatedly that it was perfectly safe. He quote, there doesn't appear to be any safety red flags or safety issues. The track record for serious adverse events is very good. It's very, very, very rare that you ever see anything associated with the vaccine. That's a serious event. Now, let's remember, this was a fast-track vaccine. It never went through all the different regulatory hurdles and testing and review as most vaccines go through. They had to fast-track this very quickly. And there was, and even today, as of 2018, there were still millions of dollars were still being paid out for the swine flu vaccine injuries. Which include Guillain-Barre's, there was the different brain damage, miscarriages, spontaneous abortions. The UK, United Kingdom had to compensate hundreds of victims for the injury. And also, that as in terms of Fauci's predictions on the severity of the swine flu, they were completely off mark. Cheryl Atkinson reported that very well when she was trying to get the CDC to give give the exact figures of how many people were positive for the strain of the swine flu. And she was not able to get that information. So she went to California and tried to get to, and go to the different states because they keep different records. And that's where the tests are being conducted, where they're actually looking to see what strain a person may have, concerning especially after post-mortem. And out of the 14,000 people that were believed to have had swine flu in California, only 2% of those had actually tested positive for swine flu. This was a pandemic that was never a pandemic. And but of course, Fauci was the one who was really promoting this. The main voice of our federal health agencies who were promoting this as being a pandemic and severe to get people to take their vaccines. So that's a kind of an overview of Fauci. And to go along with what Terry Michaels, somebody you know, a very prominent gay HIV/AIDS activist, he called Fauci the Edgar Hoover of public health, which is a very
term, in my opinion. Richard, we do not have time today to do the article, which will go into great depth. Tomorrow we'll do it. Yes, Numbers Matter, where we'll break down and show you something that no one has seen. No one has seen this. It's an official chart of all the pneumonia deaths, the normal annual deaths going back over 30 years. And suddenly, just when the coronavirus hits, it drops right off a cliff. It goes down to almost zero. Well, how do you go from 35,000 deaths from pneumonia down to zero? Because all those deaths are now being attributed to the coronavirus. That's scientific malfeasance. That's just one of the things we've uncovered. But we've uncovered a lot more, and we'll share that with you. And by the way, I want to give people an idea that even those of you who are homebound, which are probably most people listening, and certainly all the people in our anti-aging study who are doing it from their home, we had a wonderful meeting this past Saturday for a couple hours. I'm posting today, in fact, I posted it, an article up on YouTube about rebalancing your life, because if there's one thing you can do when you're at home, is you can see what you need to do to rebalance your life, to be happy, healthy, use the time that in a restricted environment in a positive way. It's a powerful 55-minute program for those of you who don't have that access to the internet, and some of our listeners, probably, I'm guessing, 4,000 or 5,000 of our listeners over on WBAI. I'm going to play that on BAI tomorrow, so you're not left out. You know, people say, well, I wanted to hear that. Well, the whole lecture, how to maintain balance in an imbalanced society, you'll be able to. And then tonight on the Progressive Commentary Hour, we're going to play that as well, so you don't want to miss that. You can watch it too, by the way, the whole lecture. Go to prn.fm, prn.fm, and we will go ahead and post the article, Yes, Numbers Matter, up on prn.fm, but we'll deal with it on tomorrow's program as well. Again, when we're on PRN, we're playing an original live program every day, but on BAI, when we play one of our Progressive Commentary Hours, it's a service to those who appreciate that if they don't have the internet, they can just have it listened to up on BAI. We're out of time, everyone. I want to thank you for taking your time to listen in. And I have more to say on this tomorrow with details. Everything that you will hear tomorrow will be completely documented from peer-reviewed literature. None of it's guessing. And you'll suddenly go, wow, I didn't realize how absolutely, absolutely misguided all of our efforts have been. And we'll try to give you the information that can protect you, that can hopefully give you some guidance so that you won't end up infected and you'll be protected. Have a nice day, everyone.